Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+, and we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Here we go, 6:14. I know it's just a regular day for most people here. Dense fog advisory in effect till 9 a.m. Be aware of that. Highs today, very nice, 74 degrees. Tomorrow, 74, 73, 78. Thursday, Super Bowl Friday, 77. Super Bowl Eve, 79. And then the big day, game day, Super Bowl Sunday, highs of 76. Dry the entire time, so really Chamber of Commerce weather. The Big Easy can shine. City that care for God, whatever you want to use. And I was walking around on Saturday, and I tweeted some pictures out. And every now and then, you really do have to just get in from the burbs, from Belchase and Metairie, and walk around and see everything this city has to offer, because it really is on display. Mike Dettelier joins us now, WWL NFL analyst, who'll be here later on, but he's nice enough to get his morning started with us. How you doing, Mike?
Fine, Tommy. Thank you.
Let's talk about teams got in last night, right? Both of them?
Yep, both of them got in yesterday, yes.
You know, when I was thinking about the teams arriving, I thought about when the Saints went to Miami to play in the Super Bowl, and somebody, they were late for a meeting or something like that. Tell that story. And Sean Payton said, if you want to keep screwing around, that's fine, but we're here to win the game, right?
Man, I don't remember that one, Tommy.
Really?
That's a good one on this. No,
yeah,
I sure don't.
I remember that. I really do. A couple of them were late for the meeting. He said, okay, you got here. That's fine. Keep screwing around. You're going to lose the game. And, of course, they didn't. Let's talk about the Chiefs and Eagles and injuries first. Mike, anybody that's out that they would really need or that they use throughout the season that's not going to be in?
That one, we're going to get a little bit more information on during the week, but their interior offensive line was really beat up. I'm talking about the Eagles now. When they went up against the Commanders a little over a week ago. And so that's going to be a cause of concern because of the fact their centers and guards were sort of interchanged, and then you had some of those guys go down to an injury. So we'll find out a little bit more about that. That's always a critical part, especially from the center position. And we saw it against the Commanders. Their starting center and guard had sort of been interchangeable. They both went down to an injury. But so I think in that spot, we'll find out a little bit more during the week on exactly that. But in these type games, those guys are going to play. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're going to have something really bad go on for you not to play in this game.
So let's talk about commonalities between the Bills and the Eagles, and we'll start with the Chiefs and their attempt to get a third straight Super Bowl. So when you look at the AFC Championship game, what do the Bills and the Eagles have in common?
One of the things I thought early on, and they got away from it, and I'm still kind of head-scratching on that, the Bills were able to run the football. And you think about what the Eagles do best, they run the ball best. They got the best offensive line in pro football. You have the top back in Saquon Barkley. And you sort of pounded away at people all year long. It's not that you don't have some top receivers. A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, who's actually from Amite, Louisiana, and went to Alabama. And man, that guy, he's a really good player. But I think their ability to run the ball. This year, Buffalo ran the ball extremely well for the entire year. And it was part, I think, what brought Joe Brady to the forefront of where people were looking at him now as a possible head coach in the NFL, because he had adjusted from being a bit of a pass-happy coach to seeing that their offensive line was very good, and you had James Cook and a couple other guys that could run the ball. I'm not sure what he did in the fourth quarter to unplug that, why he did it. Here's the thing, Tommy. You can't try to out Mahomes.
Nope.
And we've seen it time in and time out. Teams try to kind of out gunsling him. You have got to do what you have done best. And the Eagles, if I'm Kellen Moore, I'm going to run the football with Saquon Barkley 25 times or more in this game. I'm going to force them to stop the run. And for three quarters, the Chiefs had a lot of difficulties stopping the Bills' running game. It's not that they stopped it. The Bills stopped running the ball. It was, Josh, you make the play through the air. I'm perplexed why you would get away from that. Almost as though you were trying to trick them. And you can't out Mahomes. You got to do what you do best. And that's run the football. So I think that's the biggest key for the Eagles, is if the Chiefs have some success stopping the run early on, don't get away from it. And I think that happens in regular season games too. Teams get away from running the football way too quick when, oh, it's only a 2-yard run or a 3-yard run right off the bat. And you know what? Fans are like that. Oh, why are you running the ball? You got to throw it. You know, there is that wear-down effect, and I think that's what the Eagles have done best all year long, and I thought that's what the Bills did all year long. They ran the football extremely well, and the flip of that is they're still trying to cover Zach Ertz.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at what the Eagles had some difficulties in on defense, Zach Ertz, I think, caught 13 passes against the Commanders. I mean, that's how big of an impact he was for them, for Jaden Daniels and the Commanders. He caught 13. Guess who plays tight end for the Chiefs?
Yeah, I know. You
said
before.
That Kelce guy's pretty good, isn't he?
Right. Ertz so, played with the Eagles before, but he was with the Commanders on Sunday, correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so, man, my thing is, there is something there for the Chiefs to look at, to say, why did they have so much difficulty covering Zach Ertz? And if there's a flaw there, everybody's got it on any team. I think that, to me, jumped out, that the Chiefs had trouble stopping the run, but you unplugged it. And for the Chiefs, they had to see that the Commanders had great success throwing the football to the tight end.
You know, what else is puzzling is teams get away from running a ball when they're ahead of the chains. They'll run, you know, 8 yards one play, 9 yards the next, what they do, throw it. Why? I don't understand that. We'll take a break. Live from Radio Row, celebrating Super Bowl week in New Orleans, is powered by Lambert, Zaney, Smith, and So-So. Back with Mike Dettelier in a second. You got any questions? The Oakland Air Jeweler Talk and Text Line is open, 504-260-1870. Right now, time for traffic, WWL. All right, Tommy Tucker, live from Radio Row as we celebrate Big Game Week in New Orleans, powered by Lambert, Zaney, Smith, and So-So. Mike Dettelier is with us. You know who Mike Dettelier is. He'll be here later on this evening, and the place will really be jumping in. Mike, you know, we talked about teams getting away from running the ball so early, and sometimes, man, they'll be ahead of the chains. They'll pick up 8 yards, 9 yards, 7 yards, 5 yards, and what do they do? Throw it. Why? Why don't they run it until it gets stopped? I don't understand that.
Tommy, it's a good question, and a lot of it, I think, is because when you have a top quarterback, and when you get to these games, it is rare that you aren't making it on the back of a top quarterback, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think you kind of put it in their hands.
Mike, we're trying to matriculate the ball down the field, fellas, aren't we?
Yeah, and so I think you kind of, in the back of your mind, caught a hang your hat on that quarterback, that he's going to make every play, everything done. And that's the one thing I give Andy Reid great credit, in that okay, you all know that how good Mahomes is, but they do have the running game involved with it also. And it's about his play calling skills, but everybody points to that direction. But to me, it's how innovative he is with a call. He'll run a play, but it doesn't look the same. He kind of changes up what it sort of looks like, and almost a confused effort on the defense of, okay, we saw it on film, and they ran it this way, and he gives you the same play, but he changes up exactly kind of how the play ends up. I think that's what separates Andy Reid. Play calling is an art form. It really is. But when you start changing up the play and it gives you a different look, man, that's a remarkable part of his expertise as not only a play caller but a play designer.
Mike, have you ever heard the creative process described as you go from huh to ah to ha-ha, where you can have fun with it? And that's where, yep, I think Andy Reid is. He realizes what he has with Patrick Mahomes, and he draws up some things that just utilize his skills to the utmost. It would be easy to be lazy and just go with what he has. You understand what I'm saying? And just let Mahomes be Mahomes, but or at least get the almost best out of him. But he goes the extra step to take these great skills that Mahomes has and design some plays uniquely around those, which maybe a lot of other coaches would not do.
I agree. The thing with Mahomes, and having watched him throughout the years from his days at Texas Tech and now, is he's Pete Maravich with a football.
Mm-hmm.
He can do things with a football very few guys can do. And the ball comes out a little differently every time he throws it. It's not all this over-the-top mechanical stuff. It's sometimes just side on three quarters. He'll kind of pitch a pass at time. It's almost like, you know, kind of growing up as a kid, you watch Pete Maravich do that with a basketball. You watching Mahomes do that with a football today.
We got to take a break. That's the best description I've heard yet. Pat Mahomes is like Pete Maravich with a football. Well, Pat Mahomes with a football is like Pete Maravich with a basketball. More with Mike Dettelier when we come back. We're live here from Radio Row. I'll get it out. Powered by Lambert, Zaney, Smith, and So-So. More when we return. Time now, WWL First News. All right, here we are back on Radio Row, New Orleans Convention Center, 644, 16 till 7. Happy Groundhog's Day. See, that's the joke because the movie is, and yesterday was. Anyway, Mike Dettelier joins us now as we continue talking about the Super Bowl, Kansas City, Philadelphia. Mike, when it comes to comparisons, and I look at, you know, and it's a team sport, I get that. But on the surface, if you look at Andy Reid, Nick Sirianni, and you got a scale, right? Imagine a scale. I got it, and I don't mean this is a Andy Reid's weight at all. I'm not saying that. Terry Bradshaw got in some trouble for that a couple of years ago. But it would seem like, in terms of experience, et cetera, it goes to Andy Reid. Thoughts?
No question about it. You know, he's been there, done that. Nick Sirianni coached in the Super Bowl 2 years ago. And to be honest with you, man, they had the Chiefs on the ropes. They just couldn't put them away. And Jalen Hurts outplayed Mahomes that day. When you look at it, man, he really did. It's just that the Eagles' defense couldn't stop Mahomes at the end. But, yeah, I think the advantage there, not only Andy Reid, but Steve Spagnuolo on the defensive side of the football.
Man, I got to tell you.
Defensive coordinator. Think about what a wild run Spagnuolo has had. You know, and he's the only coordinator in NFL history to win Super Bowls with two different teams, because he was the defensive coordinator of the Giants. Now, you know, they had Mike Strahan and Justin Tuck and those guys, and they won it. And then, you know, he has a wild ride. He gets to Kansas City, and they win it there. So he's been a coordinator at two different stops to win Super Bowls. And how he hasn't become a head coach again, it kind of shakes my head a little bit. I would have thought by now somebody would have given him another shot. He was a head coach with the Rams for a brief period. Didn't work out there, but man, with all these other coaches getting second and third shots, but because he's a defensive-oriented coach is probably the reason. But, man, that's unbelievable resume, and he's on a Pro Football Hall of Fame career as an assistant coach.
I know, but every time I see him, every time they cut to that shot of him, every time they talk about what a genius he is, you know what I think of, right?
Yeah, he was here that one year with the Saints, the bounty year.
And had what?
And it was one of the worst defenses in the history of the National Football League. And we had Pete Jenkins on up. I got Pete during the week, and Pete actually was trying to help him at that time. And just the chaotic situation that was happening here with no Sean Payton. And then, you know, Joe Vitt was the head coach for a little while, and then Aaron Kramer became the coach. Like you said, it was such a crazy deal. And I know Spags would always talk about it because he had come a couple times to Louisiana Line Camp, was that I saw Sean when he hired me. I was good friends with him, and I saw when he fired me. Mm. Nothing in between. So, yeah, it was a kind of a crazy ride for Spagnuolo, but man.
Wait, say that again? I think it's pretty good.
He said, I saw him when he hired me, and he said, you know, we were good friends, Sean and I. And he said, I didn't see him again until he fired me when he came back and coached the team.
Mm. But that's just because the situation he was in, I guess. What gets me about that, Mike, is a good coach with great players. Great players can make a coach look really good, right? And I guess the other side.
No question about it. And the one thing I give the Chiefs, they have drafted well. And they've brought him in a lot of good young players throughout the last two or three years. And he's really built that team when their offense has merely sometimes at times not played well. They've been carried by their defense. And so a lot of those young guys, man, he had to feed those pups real quick and real early, and they got in there, and they were playmakers across the board. The thing that I guess that jumps out at me is, and we see it all throughout the season, Saints had trouble with it too in the third game of the year, is how well the Chiefs' offensive line, which is not a strength of theirs, how well they'll be able to block who I think is the best defensive tackle in pro football, and that's Jalen Carter. And then, man, you got Jordan Davis on the other side, all 345 pounds of him. Mm-hmm. That is going to be quite a task for the Chiefs because Carter, he's rarely out of the lineup. I think it measured out on Pro Football Focus. I saw like 97% of the time he plays. Now, he may take a play or two off to catch his breath, but, man, when he's cranked up, he is something special to watch in the middle for the Eagles. So how they can control Jalen Carter, who has really been, as much as we want to talk about the running game and all, it's a huge factor. What he's, because of his maturity as a player, what he's done for that Eagles defense, he's been the big key part, along with Zach Bond, who did make it here, but boy, did he make it in Philly with Vic Fangio coaching it.
When it comes to the scale that we're talking about, you got to look at the quarterbacks on that same scale, right? And you got Jalen Hurts on one side and Patrick Mahomes on the other. And I know Jordan's sitting here from University of Alabama. Jalen Hurts is his quarterback. He don't want to hear this, but I just don't see where that's even close. We'll pick it up here. We'll come back. 6:50, 10 till 7. Tommy Tucker, WWL, live from Radio Row, powered by Lambert, Zaney, Smith, and So-So. Time now, WWL traffic. 55, couple of minutes left with Mike Dettelier. Mike, I was talking about quarterbacks earlier, and we got our scale out. You got Patrick Mahomes on one side, Jalen Hurts on the other. You got to tip that heavily to Mahomes, huh?
You got to tip it to Mahomes, but, man, I give Jalen Hurts a lot of credit. He came here to the Manning Passing Academy when he was at Alabama. And one of the vivid memories I have of that is Peyton Manning working with him on him setting his feet and his body balance and control when he throws the football. And he lost his starting spot at Alabama in the national championship game when Tua came in and sort of saved the day against Georgia. And then Jalen was a different player when he went to Oklahoma. You can poo-poo Lincoln Riley all you want. His offenses have always been really good, and he knows how to nurture and groom quarterbacks. One of them was Jalen Hurts. The Jalen Hurts we saw at Oklahoma was totally different than the guy we saw at Alabama. And his maturing as an NFL quarterback, where he's a 64% passer in the NFL. Tommy, that is really good.
Yeah.
When you look at, okay, he can't out Mahomes, but he brings that element of a running game. Because if you see him up close and personal, he looks like a fullback. He's built that way, mm-hmm. especially from the lower body down. Man, he's pieced together. He's the son of a coach, a high school coach. And he has really made great strides as a quarterback and getting better as a passer. And you don't see that a lot to upgrade the accuracy skills. But Jalen Hurts has really, really developed into a very good NFL quarterback. But he understands how to play in the element of his game. And that is, this team is built to run the ball. And he's part of the running game. It's just not all Saquon. It's also partially him in being able to give that option that he can keep the football. And he's dangerous out in the open field running the football.
Mike, one thing I don't understand. The total's at 49.5, and they scored like 73 points, I think, the last time they met in the Super Bowl. And I don't know that either team has changed substantially. That total just seems extremely low for me. And again, keep in mind, as Mike Dettelier often says, you can watch the game and you don't have to bet it.
Tommy, I felt the same way because it actually started out, I think, at 45.5, 46. And then made the jump to 49.5. I don't know who put that thing at 45.5, 46, but even at 49.5, I think that this game's going to be an over game. You can have your choice on who you think will win,
right.
But to me, that's the play.
That's
the
exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Between the two teams.
And I'm no handicapper or anything, but it just seems like, man, you know what? Who knows who's going to win, who's going to not? People got these conspiracy theories. But if you look at the teams, substantially are not really different, I don't think, than they were back then. And the amount of points they scored, plus it's an indoor game. Maybe I'm missing something. I don't know. We'll see.
I agree with you, Tommy. And that those conspiracy theorist people are when they lose.
Yeah.
When their team doesn't win. Well, when their team wins, it's not a conspiracy. They just played real well. So I get what you're going at, though.
Best way is to bet over on a total, then you're rooting for everybody. Thank you, Mike.
Yeah, that's right. Thank you, Tom.
Have a good time. We'll be listening when you get here this evening. We'll take a break. We come back. We're going to talk to Mary Beth Romig, Assistant Vice President of Public Relations for New Orleans & Company, about their plans for the Super Bowl. Then we'll take a look at the week ahead on Wall Street, Monday Morning Markets with Mark Rosa, see what tariffs are up to here on WWL. All right, dense fog advisory in effect for 9 o'clock. I know here we're in a kind of insulated world because it's the biggest event in the world, and we're proud to be a part of it. It's 7:14, highs today of about 75 degrees, and then Chamber of Commerce weather all the way through the week, warming to Saturday with highs of 79, no rain all the way through the big game, Super Bowl Sunday, partly cloudy, highs of 76. And Mary Beth Romig joins us right now in the virtual Treasure Chest Power Seat to be interviewed here on WWL as we broadcast. Give me a second, Mary Beth. I'll get through it. All week long here as we broadcast live from Radio Row to celebrate Big Game Week in New Orleans. So here to sit in the virtual Treasure Chest Power Seat is Mary Beth Romig, our friend. How you doing, Mary Beth?
I am great. I'll be sitting in the media center in a couple of hours for the host committee representing us to all the media today, but I'm sorry I couldn't be there in person this morning.
Are you talking about the New Orleans Super Bowl host committee media center where we're currently located?
I am talking about that very same place.
Oh, it's beautiful. It really is. Y'all did an outstanding job here with an open mayonnaise bar. You can have it kind of mayonnaise you want. I had a blue plate on the rocks earlier, and it really did get my day going. It was great. And then they got
a beautiful... Delicious.
It is a beautiful set behind us. Tell me about everything that's going on, and I want to start with maybe opening night, because I'm checking a couple of different sites. And first of all, this just intrigued me when I first heard about it last week. And there's less than 1% of the tickets left. So take us through that, Mary Beth, if you can, please.
Well, you know, it's interesting because this never happened for years. Media Day was always held on Tuesday, and it was not open to the public. But the NFL changed their game plan a couple of Super Bowls ago. And so tonight, the general public can go into the Superdome starting at 5 p.m. and watch as the two teams come out. They'll come out at different times and take to the field. And if you have some special headphones that they will be making available, you'll actually be able to hear what the players are saying and the coaches are saying. Yeah.
Wow.
But when it opens, it'll give people a chance to see how the Superdome has transformed into the playing field for the Super Bowl, which will look very different from how it looks during a normal Saints game. But, you know, the Dome has never looked better. It's 50 years old, but it's like a brand new stadium after the 5-year renovation that took place. And this is a chance for people to see what it looks like for the big game coming up on Sunday. I do want to add that if you go to our website to the link to the event, mm-hmm. I know they say tickets start at $20, but mm-hmm. if you use the code SAINTS in all capital letters, you can get 50% off the ticket price.
Wow. And what is the website for that, Mary Beth?
Give me a second. I'm going to click on it. I'm looking at my laptop here.
Okay.
I want to say it's neworleans.com, which will give you the place to click on for a discount.
This is the biggest event in the world, without doubt. And I know people say the World Cup, and I get that, but the World Cup's not going on right now. Without doubt,
right.
At this time,
right.
This is the biggest event in the world, and we are so lucky to have it here.
We are, and I don't know if folks have seen the news yet, but no other city can do things like New Orleans does. For instance, yesterday, the Lombardi Trophy arrived in the city via a second line, mm-hmm. with Deuce McAllister riding in a French Quarter carriage,
Deuce.
Bringing the Lombardi Trophy to Jackson Square, and then they started with the light show on the Cathedral and the Presbyter and the Cabildo. It's just incredible. It's so exciting.
I want to talk more about that when we come back, because we've got a break coming up, but I do want to talk about the things for just the fans to experience, because I came down, and I told a story earlier, to get my media pass on Saturday, and I walked from the station, mm-hmm. which was not that long of a walk, but then I decided to just go through the Riverwalk, because I hadn't done that in a while, and then walk through the French Quarter. And I think every now and then, and I'm not trying to sound like a homer, but you do have to get out of the burbs, out of Metairie, out of Belchase, where I live, and just come down to the city on a beautiful day like it was on Saturday and see everything that the city has to offer, really. I mean, it's a great opportunity to do that.
It looks beautiful downtown, and it's just so special for our entire community. Just all the things that are going on. So we can talk about that when we come back.
Did you get that site or not, the website?
Oh, I'm sorry. I think it's neworleans.com. Let me look it up.
I thought you had it. I'm sorry. I didn't understand. I thought you had it. We'll do that, and then we'll give you the site. And if you put in the code SAINTS in all capital letters, you get 50% off the tickets. Everything that I'm looking at shows me less than 1% of the tickets remain. So I would get your tickets if you're going to go. And the media night and opening night, if you want to call it that, is a zoo as it is, with just God knows how many media people and your favorite media people. I'm talking about nationally and everything, internationally, walking around. You never know who you're going to see. Plus the players, it's going to be a full night. It starts at 7 o'clock. We'll find out what time the doors open and more when we come back. We're live on Radio Row here. It's Big Game Week in New Orleans. It is powered by Lambert Zaney Smith and So-So right now, 720. Let's take a break for traffic on WWL. 25, Tommy Tucker live from Radio Row, celebrating Big Game Week in New Orleans, powered by Lambert Zaney Smith and So-So. Mary Beth Romig is our guest in the Treasure Chest virtual hot seat as we are here at the New Orleans Super Bowl Host Committee Media Center, and she's telling us about all the free stuff that's going on the Super Bowl opening night. Again, everything I check says less than 1% of the tickets available. Mary Beth, the website where people can go to get their ticket and enter the code SAINTS in all capital letters, and they get 50% off, is
neworleans.com.
Well, there you go. How easy could that be?
www.neworleans.com. That's our website, and it's /event, and then / Super Bowl opening night. And there's
not to
a
be
lot
argumentative,
of other great.
I think it's a forward slash because I think you rarely use a backslash.
Sorry, that's right. Forward slash. Thanks for the correction.
You know why I say that? Because somebody corrected me on that a long time ago.
I'm not gifted.
Me neither. But I thought it made me sound like I knew what the hell I was doing. So you know.
There you go. There you go.
Can fake them. Tell me what else is going on that people can take advantage of. Because I'm getting texts here from people saying they totally agree with me. Took my daughter to the city on Sunday and just walked around enjoying the Super Bowl sights. Because this is rarefied air. This is the biggest event in the world, and we're lucky enough to have it here. Tell us what people can do, Mary Beth.
Well, every night you can go down to the Jackson Square area and see that beautiful light show that's taking place. And it really is incredible. Again, a once only in New Orleans kind of thing. And then Wednesday through Saturday is the Super Bowl experience at the Convention Center, which is just a lot of games and fun times, former players signing autographs, and kids under 12 get in free for that. And then what we're really excited about is another only in New Orleans thing, and that's Saturday morning for the parade. And, I mean, what other city can throw a Mardi Gras parade when they're hosting Super Bowl except New Orleans?
So is this, I'm trying to remember because I've been here. Okay, I've been here for all the Super Bowls. I was a little bit kid when I first
11?
Started. But I have been here for all of them. Is this the first Super Bowl parade? I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, it is.
That's awesome. Tell me about the route and who's going to be in it and what's it going to look like?
Well, Raising Cane's is the major sponsor, so Todd Graves will serve as the Grand Marshal. They're going to have 17 floats and marching bands, just like our traditional Mardi Gras parades do. And it starts down at near the Mint on Decatur Street and will roll along Decatur Street, turn on Poydras, and it'll eventually pass Gallier Hall, going the other way that from our usual Mardi Gras parade route, and then it'll disband around Lee Circle. I'm sorry, I called it Lee Circle, Harmony Circle, and it's going to just be showcase New Orleans traditions in a way that no other city can do. So I'm really excited for that.
What time does the parade start?
It starts at 10 o'clock. And I guess it'll make its way down that route. And they predict it'll end around 12:30, 1 o'clock. So it'll be a great time for everybody.
The weather's going to be perfect. Who's going to be on the floats?
Can you imagine? This weather is spectacular.
I called it Chamber of Commerce weather, which is cliche, but it's true. Who's going to be on the floats? Do you know?
I think they'll have some special guests, former players, corporate sponsors. New Orleans & Company is lucky enough to have a float. We'll have some special guests on there. And we're also giving some international media an opportunity to ride on our float to showcase New Orleans back to the U.K. and Germany.
I tell you what you ought to do, get the Newell Norman on a float, because he told me a story at the Pelicans game on Friday night about going to the Saints Super Bowl in Miami and riding on a bus with somebody, and they got connected with Tony Dorsett, and they had a blast. So if you're looking for an ambassador of fun, Newell's your guy.
You know, if we can't play in the Super Bowl, then why not host a Super Bowl? It's just a great time. It's going to be a great week, and I hope everybody just soaks it all in.
Amen, Mary Beth. Thank you so much. We'll see you during the week. I'm sure Mary Beth Roman.
I'll see you later this morning.
Okay, good. I'm Assistant Vice President of Public Relations for New Orleans & Company. A lot of stuff going on. You can go to neworleans.com and find out all about it. And I'm going to tell you, man, just walking around and I'm getting the texts that are backing me on this or agreeing with me, don't miss it, because who knows when it's going to happen again. And a lot of it is free, so just get out and enjoy it. Enjoy the atmosphere. And when we come back, we're going to talk to Mark Rosa, Monday Morning Markets with Mark. Dow not reacting favorably to tariffs. We'll talk about all that and more when we return. Right now, time for WWL First News. All right, Mark Rosa, President and CEO of Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union, just happens to find himself in a Treasure Chest Casino power seat today as we're here at the New Orleans Super Bowl Host Committee Media Center. It's the biggest event in the world going on. We're lucky enough to host it. But, Mark, the economy goes on as well, as does the business of America, which is business.
Sure.
How you doing, Mark?
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm all right. You all right?
It's good, yeah. Beautiful weekend.
So I'm looking at an Associated Press headline here. It says, Trump kept his pledge on tariffs. Is he ready for the fallout? Are Americans? I think that's a good way to start.
Tell me, you know, the market doesn't like something that comes in obliquely to them. Market likes, you know, steady as she goes, and they don't like this type of disruption. And we're seeing it through the market averages. They're downturning, expecting the tariffs to come in. And, of course, the unknown, they don't like that, because the unknown would be, well, how long are they going to stick around? Mm-hmm. And I'd love the Canadians just to say, you know, we'll help on the border, and and Mexico would say the same thing. And I think he would back off of that. I think that's the only real thing under his nails about imposing the tariffs. But you're right. It's going to potentially stoke inflation. The Fed is worried about that. They have been for the last couple of years. They had their meeting last week and decided to leave interest rates unchanged. Okay, that was baked into the cake. But the Fed's their own inflation gauge came out, the personal consumption expenditure for December, and just when they were releasing the FOMC was releasing the news that they weren't raising rates, and it was up by 0.3%. As expected, but the previous month was up by only 0.1. Now, what does that mean? The 0.3, that's for 1 month. You have to multiply it by 12. That's a 3.6% annual rate. And how that contrasts from the previous month of just over 1% annual rate? Well, the last month was the biggest increase since last April. So really, the tariffs are going to very potentially stoke inflation. Ideally, they would come off like it did in Colombia. Colombia cooperated with the U.S. and they came off very quickly before any damage could be done. But if this sticks around for a while, Goldman Sachs is already reporting the market averages should be down because it's going to hurt business earnings. And the two things that affect stock prices or determine stock prices, interest rates and corporate earnings, if those start taking a hit, then we're in for a kind of a snowball type of process here. So inflation due to the tariffs. The PCE was the highest in the about 8 months, and that's what's got the Dow opening down. If it opened right now, it'd be down 577 points. But you know, Tom, we were on our way as things have calmed down, and it's kind of like the maybe a interest rate decrease this year was baked into the cake late last year, but that's gone, and I think the market has dealt with it. So the Dow started rising. The earnings have been good on the companies that are reporting. Generally speaking, the majority of them are reporting earnings better than expected. And the Dow is going to talk about 401ks and our savings. The Dow is going to get back to its all-time high, hit just after the election last year, right over 45,000. So it was 44,700. And now, again, it's going to drop. We're looking at an opening of down the better part of 600. So that's the uncertainty being broadcast through the markets as we don't know what these tariffs are going to bring.
So, you know, I always look at it from the negotiating standpoint, and I get where he's trying to force Canada and Mexico to do what he wants to do. But it seems as though he's got an economic gun aimed at the head of the American people because, and somebody texted, and I'm trying to leave the politics out of this, but as it relates to tariffs, somebody said, why is Trump telling us to prepare for some pain? For months, he's been telling us that we would not pay the tariffs that the target country would pay, so we should have no pain at all. Explain tariffs, if you will, Mark, and kind of take us through that.
Well, it's going to increase the price coming over here, so we will have the pain. I mean, like I just mentioned, Goldman Sachs is saying it's going to hit the companies, and then they're going to hit us. I'll give you, for instance, what if, you know, talk about a 25% tariff on Canada. Well, what do we depend on them most for is industrial supplies, oil, aluminum, lumber. So anything to do with construction, you're going to see a 25% increase. Mm-hmm. All the oil that we buy from them is the majority that we buy from other countries. And a lot of people don't know that, but we get any kind of, you know, some people say, oh, it's Saudi or whatever. No, it's Canada. Mm-hmm. Most of the oil that we buy some from Mexico also, but that's a much smaller percentage. So, okay, take that energy, and it's going to ripple through down to your Fruit Loops that you eat in the morning, because it costs more money to get the groceries to the grocery store and then ultimately to us. So yeah, it's going to be painful, and I think it's going to be far more painful to Canada and Mexico especially. But if it slows down our purchasing of those items, I think they're going to feel it in a far more determined way than we're going to feel it. But I'm thinking they're going to relent. I'm thinking, okay, we're just going to police our border a little bit better, and we won't have the problem that he's so interested in fighting. And I think this might relieve fairly quickly. Again, Colombia couldn't take it for one day. You know, they were like, okay, we'll do what you want to do, and the tariffs were removed, so they can come off as quickly as they go on. But in the meantime, the markets are not going to like this.
So who's got the most to lose when it comes to this? Is it Canada? Is it Mexico? Is it the American people?
Well, all of us are going to lose incrementally. I think Canada is going to lose more. At least it was reported over the weekend that they would have less resilience to this. But Mexico is a poorer country, so mm-hmm. it wouldn't be surprising if they lost, quote, more than Canada did. I think Canada could weather it a little bit better, but we get an awful lot. Again, back to that oil. That's coming over, and if that causes us to, higher prices, people buy less. It's simple economics. So that let's just cross our fingers that this will pass by very quickly, because if it goes longer, the Fed's going to get involved. You know, its PCE just hit a high record in about 8 months. This is going to bring inflation in, and it's causing the Fed to sit up straight. So this is a lot of uncertainty in the markets right now.
Mark, let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back. Some questions are coming in. First of all, my question is, the economy is about more than just our 401ks, right? So we'll talk about inflation. We'll talk about ripple effects of that. Somebody texted in and said the USA exports way more products to Canada than vice versa. Verify with Mark if you would. So we'll talk about that when we come back. Somebody else wants to know about 10-year treasury bonds. I know, again, the economy is comprised of a lot more than just the Dow, the 500. So we'll take a break, pick it up when we come back. Tommy Tucker, we're live here on Radio Row, New Orleans Super Bowl Host Committee Media Center. It is 7:52, time for traffic now, WWL. Tommy Tucker, WWL. We're live here at the New Orleans Super Bowl Host Committee Media Center on Radio Row, powered by Lambert, Zaney, Smith, and So-So. Mark Rosa taking a look at the week ahead on Wall Street Monday morning markets. With Mark. Mark, the S&P 500 is not the economy. The economy is a lot more than that. There are a lot of different things involved. Markets go up, markets go down. Timeline is important here. If you were planning on retiring tomorrow and you had all of your money in your 401k and in stocks and bonds, well, maybe it's a little bit late for that anyway, right? So you should have thought ahead on that. Take me through the timeline on all of this and how quickly the economy could recover if Canada and Mexico does what the president wants them to do.
Tommy, first of all, the S&P 500 is one of the key leading economic indicators. And the thought is if those companies are doing well, meaning they're making money and contributing positively to their own capital, then the S&P goes up. But it represents so many companies beneath it. So that is a good economic indicator for that. But the answer in the previous question, somebody had said that we import more than we export, and that's true.
No, the other way around. They said they exports the USA exports way more to Canada than the other way.
Google says in 2022 we exported $356 billion to Canada, and we imported $436 billion from Canada. And that was consistent. So that's about an $80 billion deficit. In 22, in 23, it was a $41 billion deficit. Now, if you exclude what the point I was making before with the energy, if you take energy out of that, it flips over. So it's energy is the primary component of what we're getting from Canada. And that's we are giving them less than they are sending to us. So the economy isn't near the size of the U.S. Ours is the largest in the world. So I think they are going to be hurt far more than we're going to be hurt for several of those reasons. They just don't have the resilience to take this kind of hit very quickly, and that's what's going to happen when these tariffs turn on.
So for people that are concerned, I guess maybe a better way to ask it would be how quickly could everything recover from something like this, because Canada could Thursday decide to do what the president wants and he takes tariffs off. So
Well, it's doable. It, you know, it's not something like COVID hit and you can't negotiate with it. It's doable. I think this is a political play. I think that, you know, that's why he did it. It's like, if you're not cooperating with us and keeping your borders secure, well, we'll attack this economically, but we're gonna have our own share of hurt. But that's the good part. The good part is that could reverse and just go back to normal, and then we wouldn't feel these effects. We can talk Friday more about, you know, where the markets are. A little bit inflated right now, so we have to pay attention to that.
Let's do it. Everybody take a breath in between now and then. Slowly coming to life here as Super Bowl week unfolds. We're at the New Orleans Super Bowl Host Committee Media Center, as you just heard. And it's going to be a big week. The whole station's going to be here all week long, and we'll have all types of NFL players and higher-ups and everything else as they walk by. It happens every time the Super Bowl is in town. So if you can, get out and walk around the city. Take advantage of a lot of the stuff that's gone on. And the last time I think I did it, it was a while ago, but I think Denver was playing the 49ers in the Super Bowl. Yeah, I didn't buy a drink the entire time I was in the French Quarter. But on to more serious stuff, Shem Malmquist joins us now, a visiting instructor at the Florida Institute of Technology, and a pilot for over 35 years, to talk about what we know about that aircraft, the two aircraft that collided and plunged into the Potomac last week. Good morning, Captain. How are you?
Good morning. Good. How are you?
I'm okay, sir. Let me take a step back, if I can, and talk about just the unparalleled safety of air travel in this country, and how that really was what happened was an anomaly on last week. Talk about that, if you would, please.
Well, fortunately, that's very true. We have had an exemplary safety record, and flying continues to be extremely safe, of course. But, of course, on the other side, we have seen some close calls, I guess you could say, over the last couple of years. And so that is something that many of us have been concerned about and watching. But even so, I mean, you know, a close call is a close call. You know, if they say that, you know, close only matters in horseshoes and hand grenades. And in this case, we have, you know, an extremely safe system. And a lot of that safety is because, and even with these close calls that have occurred, people have been able to intervene and keep it safe in the face of, you know, some pretty close calls and other events happening.
What do we know now that we didn't know last week?
Well, there's a bit that has come up. You know, we know that the helicopters are on a extremely important national security mission of where they are. They run very defined routes through the region, and that entire airspace is extremely compressed between the needs for the military to be operating and then the Reagan DCA airport being in proximity of all of that, which many have argued maybe that airport shouldn't even be there. But of course, being the nation's capital and adding so much convenience for our elected representatives, that airport has a lot of reason to be there. And but the mix is just very, very tight. And in this case, it appears the aircraft, the regional jet, was assigned another runway on a visual approach. Visual approaches do not involve air traffic control providing guidance for the aircraft flight path.
Wait, let me take a step back there if I can, Captain. So the pilot is in the cockpit and he's looking to land, right? So take me from that point. What happens? What does he do?
Well,
the air traffic control tower, et cetera?
So the controller offered a different runway, which is a bit more convenient for the pilot, they pull right into the terminal. It's a bit quicker, but it's also a bit shorter. And it's not an unusual thing for them to do. But the pilots now are on their own in terms of guidance. There's not air traffic control guiding them onto the final approach course and providing that kind of separation. Instead, they are just handing it off to the pilot to handle and manage their flight path, which in itself is not a huge problem. Although I should say that according to the Flight Safety Foundation, 40% of landing accidents have occurred during visual approaches. So it does increase some risk, but it's not, it's certainly manageable on its own. And
so why do they do that? Why does it go to visual only, and not, why does the air traffic controller, even though it's because it's an alternative runway, or why would the air traffic controller not be still be involved in it, I guess I'm asking?
Well, there's a few advantages from the standpoint of air traffic control. By having aircraft come in on a visual, they are now relieved of having to provide that guidance, and they can turn their attention to other traffic. So it enables the system to move through metal, more metal through the system, than it could otherwise. It just, with the number of people involved, with the number of controllers involved, it expedites things and keeps things moving a little bit more smoothly, keeps things moving along, if you will.
Let me take a break. We're going to pick it up here when we come back. I'm just trying to understand, you know, a lot of us, Captain, we sit in the plane and we don't know what the heck's going on.
Yeah.
We just turn it all over and we hope that everything works out all right. I want to ask you about the videos that have come out and what you've seen. And I don't know anything about flying at all, but it would seem as though, and I don't know what's sped up, I don't know what's not in this day and age, I don't know what's real and what's not, but it would seem as though one would have seen the other and would have somehow been able to take action, or maybe not, because again, I don't know anything about flying, but you do, and that's why we're happy to have you. As we talk about the crash that happened last week, Shem Malmquist is our guest, visiting instructor at the Florida Institute of Technology, a pilot for over 35 years, so he knows what he's talking about. If you have any questions or comments, 504-260-1870. That's the Oakland Jeweler Talk and Text line. Now let's look at traffic on WWL. 825, Tommy Tucker, WWL. We're live here in Radio Row, New Orleans, Super Bowl Host Committee Media Center. And we are talking Super Bowl, but we wanted to follow up on the crash last week that happened with the helicopter and the commuter aircraft plunging into the Potomac. Shem Malmquist is our guest, visiting instructor at the Florida Institute of Technology and a pilot for over 35 years. Captain, I don't know, you know, one from the other, but when I look at the video, it's easy to presume that one or the other could have taken evasive action. Tell me why maybe what we're seeing is not necessarily the best thing to draw conclusions from, and what did you see when you saw that video? Because you've been a pilot for 35 years, you know, right?
Yeah, so a couple of things going on. So the regional jet is coming in, and they're aligning and turning in a left turn along the river edge, to line up with the final approach. Mm-hmm. And at that point on the approach, now, first of all, they're turning away from the direction where that helicopter is coming from. So the view of the helicopter is already going to be obstructed. Plus, at 300 feet or so on an approach, the pilots need to be concentrating on ensuring the airplane is aligned correctly, that it's at the right altitude, the right speed, the aircraft is ready to land, it's configured, the power is where it needs to be. The runway is a short one, so that's going to increase that attention to every little detail. The last thing that we're going to be looking for when you get close into the runway is other aircraft. We're presuming that area is free and clear. I mean, there are birds are certainly a possibility, especially along a waterway, but other aircraft, that's really not something that we're expecting to see right at that moment. And at the same time, the military helicopter, which was on a flight, you know, they had an instructor, an experienced pilot who was flying the helicopter, but also with an instructor as well, with even more experience, and they're maneuvering, possibly using night vision goggles, which is pretty standard. I have not seen confirmation of that. Mm-hmm. But that can make it very difficult to spot another aircraft. And in this case, the air traffic control delegated authority for avoiding the regional jet to the helicopter. And also the regional jet crew and the helicopter are talking on two different frequencies, and so they can't hear each other. And there's some national security reasons for that. But that aside, it creates a situation where the two aircraft are not, or certainly the regional jet is not necessarily aware, other than, and that, you know, usually the controllers will tell you, you know, there's other traffic maneuvering, or they'll even point out helicopters. If they have you in sight, they'll maintain visual separation. And once I hear that, I'm going to assume the helicopter knows what they're doing and is going to be avoiding the area. But I'm not even sure if that transmission was made in this case. Even if it was, it wouldn't have probably changed the outcome.
So,
and the helicopter, of course, says that they have visual separation.
So when it comes to the two jobs being performed by one controller, if they were both on visual approach, would that factor into this or not?
Well, certainly having one controller working was part of it. The other part is just procedurally, by delegating the authority for not just the arrival but also separation of traffic to the aircraft, that, of course, relieves the controller of that responsibility so they can go on to doing other things they need to do. The main problem there is the assumption that the helicopter pilots saw the correct aircraft. They thought they did, but, you know, our brains and visual systems are really good when you are walking in a forest or, you know, in a wild environment. I mean, that's what, you know, humans have been doing for, you know, many thousands of years. We are not very well adapted to judging distances and objects when we're moving through the sky. We didn't evolve with wings. We don't have them. And our brains aren't very good at that. I mean, I imagine birds are better, honestly, as you'd expect, but we are not. And so it can make optical illusions occur where you can see something, especially on a clear night, and you might be spotting the wrong thing. There might be a brighter object in one space than another. And, you know, it just makes it very, very challenging. And so to rely on visual separation, that's, I would argue, probably one of the weak links in the system.
So we have to go, and we only have a couple of seconds left. It seems to me like we have some events lining up here, a confluence of events that are leading to this. And I'll ask one question before I let you go, which is, if it were daytime, do you think this would have happened?
Less likely.
Okay.
It still could have, but it's less likely.
Thank you, Captain. Hope we get to talk to you again. Thank you, Captain Shem Malmquist, visiting instructor at the Florida Institute of Technology, pilot for over 35 years. We come back, we'll talk to Colin Arnold, Director of Homeland Security and Emergency Preparedness for New Orleans, about security precautions, what you need to know if you're going somewhere or trying to avoid something. Tommy Tucker live on Radio Row, the New Orleans Super Bowl Host Committee Media Center. It is brought to us by a lot of good people, and I'll tell you about that when we come back right now. Time for WWL First News. Beautiful setup for us here at the Convention Center, New Orleans Super Bowl Host Committee Media Center. Man, I'm going to tell you what, even got a Super Bowl football out there that everybody keeps watching me because they're afraid it's going to wind up in my official Pelicans backpack, but we'll have to see how that plays out. Oh, I shouldn't have said that in front of Colin Arnold, Director of Homeland Security and Emergency Preparedness for the City of New Orleans. How you doing, Colin?
I didn't hear anything. Good morning, Tom.
Good for you. I'll try to see if I can get one for you, too. Hey, let's talk about, I was walking around on Saturday after I picked up the credential and just decided, you know what, it's a beautiful day. I'm going to go walk around the Riverwalk and then down Decatur Street to the French Quarter and all over. I spent about 4 hours walking around. And I got to tell you, man, sometimes I think we forget everything that we have going on in this city, and you need to get out of the suburbs and maybe get your head out of the headlines and the doom and gloom stories and just kind of get out and walk the streets and experience it for yourself. Thoughts?
No, I absolutely agree. It's been a very challenging month. January was probably the longest January that I can remember.
It should be April.
But right now we're in,
now, Colin.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. But we're in full-on Super Bowl mode this week. And, you know, I think it's going to be a great week. The city's ready. We've got a lot of additional security measures out there, obviously, because of January. And those things are meant to really help and kind of protect our residents and, our, of course, our visitors that are in town for Super Bowl. And I think that, you know, I think the public, you know, may need to be a little patient with some traffic issues at times. But every time we've hosted Super Bowl, it's always been, you know, traffic has always been an issue because we got a lot of people on foot. We're just a really walkable city. That's why they like this city. It's why we've done this 11 times now. And I think that as long as we keep that in mind, it's going to be a great week.
Colin, what should people locally hear? Because, you know, we're all excited about being here at the Super Bowl Host Committee Media Center and in a convention center slowly starting to come alive. And then as the week progresses, we'll have more and more NFL players walking in and out, and they got the Super Bowl experience coming up starting on Wednesday. Tonight, of course, opening night in the Dome. You can still get tickets for that. What should people that don't necessarily want to get involved in the activities, and look, it happens with Mardi Gras. I'm not trying to be negative about it. Sometimes people just want to avoid all of it, and they got their normal life to take care of. Particular areas that they should be aware of as they try to go about their daily lives?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question, and that's really what I want to talk about. I think downtown right now, CBD in particular, is just going to be really hit or miss for those that want to avoid, you know, for whatever reason, just avoid the festivities that are going on. There's going to be, you know, street closures, you know, frequently, often, and sometimes announced very quickly. There's going to be a parade over the weekend, this coming weekend. There's different events at the Sanger and other locations, and obviously in the French Quarter at night after all of these events that are sponsored events with the Super Bowl that are going on. There's going to be a lot of people, you know, down in the French Quarter. And, you know, we're enhancing the security of Jackson Square. We're going to enhance the security in Frenchman. And so a lot of those areas, if you're looking to, particularly if you're in a vehicle, if you're looking to avoid and just stay out of the way of all of the festivities, I think that's the best practice is to, you know, either be on foot or kind of have a lot of patience if you're going to be coming down into the CBD and into the French Quarter.
I think you just nailed it. Comfortable shoes and walk if you could be doing anything in the CBD or the French Quarter,
absolutely,
or the Warehouse District. And look, I went to Pelicans game on Friday night. Pels almost won. It was close. But I never felt more secure walking back from the Dome to downtown, or from the Smoothie King Center. We'll take a break, pick it up. We come back 8:51, 9 till 9. Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Colin Arnold, Director of Homeland Security and Emergency Preparedness for the city, talking about the precautions for Super Bowl week and telling you what you need to look out for. And 8:57, 3 till 9, Tommy Tucker on Radio Row at the New Orleans Super Bowl Host Committee Media Center at the New Orleans Convention Center, powered by Lambert, Zaney, Smith, and So-So. Colin Arnold's our guest, the Director of Homeland Security Emergency Preparedness for the City of New Orleans. Colin, this has nothing to do with you. This is a state law about the, I don't know what to call it other than a hole in a French Quarter enhanced security zone as far as the guns go, and a state law with the permitless carry. Any word from the governor on a workaround on that, or is that just the way it's going to be?
Not to my knowledge. I think it is what it is, and I just ask people to be responsible. You know, my personal opinion is that, you know, there's a lot of fun going on, and there's really no place for weapons. But, you know, that there are state laws that apply here, and, you know, I think that if you see something, say something is the best thing I can say. If something just doesn't seem right and you're the hair on the back of your neck is standing up, there's going to be National Guard, hundreds of state troopers, hundreds of NOPD. They're going to be everywhere for this entire week.
Yeah, I want
and
to ask
particularly
you that,
leading up to the weekend.
Walking back from the Pelicans game on Friday night on Porter Street, a couple of people and myself spotted a briefcase with a reporter's pad sticking out of it. It apparently had been dropped by somebody as they were getting in a cab or a ride share. I don't know. But I thought about you because I was wondering, what should I didn't do anything, but I thought, because it didn't suspicious, I didn't appear suspicious, and it certainly didn't make the hair on the back of my neck stand up or anything, but I thought, I wonder what I should have done about that, or what should people do? Because you need detail, right? You don't want to waste resources. At what point, if you see something, should you say something?
You know, that's a real tough one. That's probably one of the toughest situations that you'd find yourself in, is something that is sitting there but maybe doesn't look suspicious. I'm telling people, call it in. You know, call 911.
So what would they do? They would call whom? Or dial what?
They would call. I mean, we've got numerous explosives sensing canines, over 100 that are out here for this entire week. And what they would do initially is just bring a dog by it. And if the dog doesn't hit on it, that's a pretty good indication.
But what would the person walking by, like I was doing, do? What should we do?
Call 911.
Just call 911 and explain to them what's going on.
Just say, look, there's a bag here unattended on the sidewalk. This is my location. This is what it looks like. And don't touch it.
Gotcha. Thank you, Colin. Appreciate it. Colin Arnold, Director of Homeland Security Emergency Preparedness. We'll be back, WWL. All right, here we go. Hour 4 already at the New Orleans Super Bowl Host Committee Media Center in a convention center, joined by the president and CEO of New Orleans & Company, Walt Leger. How you doing, man?
I'm fantastic. It's good to be with you in person. Usually we're on the phone, so it's good to see you.
It's good to see you. You know, your dad and you and myself spent a Friday afternoon at Galatoire's before the infamous waiter retired. What was his name?
John. Yeah, John Fontenot. Great guy.
And that was one of the greater New Orleans afternoons of my life. And I think that the reason I bring that up is there are so many things here, and I was walking around downtown. I've been talking about it all morning over the weekend. I think we need to get out of the suburbs every now and then and come back and see everything that the city has to offer. And I'm not trying to be a cheerleader or a homer when I say that, but I just kind of looked at it, and I know, you know, you talk about being a tourist in your hometown, but I looked at it through different eyes, and it's like, you know what, this is pretty special, looking down the river and a Coast Guard boat in the middle of the river and the Crescent City Connection, the ships, everything else.
When you live in a city as beautiful as ours, you get spoiled,
you
like
do.
Anything else, and I think it's great to get those fresh eyes. Look, I was down this what day is it? It's Monday.
Today,
right?
Monday, yeah.
On Saturday night, I was
You think
down.
You don't know what day it is now? Wait till Sunday, my friend. You have no idea.
It's an exciting week. Yeah. But Saturday night, I was down in the French Quarter. I walked down Bourbon Street towards the Supreme Court building. We had the 50, we still do, in fact, have the 50 chief justices of the Supreme Courts of our 50 great states here in New Orleans for a conference. And so I was going over there to meet them and just walking up Bourbon Street at about 5 o'clock on Saturday afternoon, and just thinking, what a beautiful city it is. Shifted over to Royal, walked into the incredible Supreme Court building, and then have the chief justices from every state around the country for a reception, and then some Louisiana history and other things. It was really special, and it reminded me just how special this state is, how special this city is. And I agree, the more you can get down here, the better. It just reminds you of how fortunate we are to live either or near the city.
You guys play any beer pong or not?
A little bit. Yeah, some of them are really good. Yeah.
I would think so, yes. Let's talk about I was walking back from the Celtics. I shouldn't have said Celtics game. The Pelicans game. I almost beat them on Friday night. And I just have never felt safer. I never drive when I go to the Smoothie King Center or the Dome. I always walk because I can park at our office on Magazine. Just a word about safety, if you will, because I don't think there is a safer place in the world you could be right now.
Yeah, I mean, I was down here last night in Jackson Square, police officer on every corner. Of course, with a SEER 1 level event designated by the federal government, we've got resources that are just beyond anything that anyone else has access to. And so between federal and state and then local and then regional, of course, a lot of cooperation from Jefferson Parish and St. Bernard Plaquemines and on, St. Charles, St. John, I don't want to leave anybody out, but so much support. It's safest place in certainly in America right now, maybe anywhere, and it's going to be a really amazing week. So I am hopeful that people in the area and the suburban area will come down tonight, big kickoff event over at the Superdome.
Opening night.
Of course, the NFL Experience will be kicking off here at the Convention Center later this week, I think
Wednesday
through Saturday.
Yeah.
Those are some great opportunities for families and for people to come down and really get a feel for it.
I was checking earlier. They had less than 1% of the tickets left for opening night. They were still available. It'd be something to sell it out. And Mary Beth Roaming was telling me if you go to neworleans.com and use the code word Saints, you can get 50% off the ticket price, which is not that high to begin with.
Yep. So you get it for $10. And look, it's a big deal. One of the things that the NFL really wants to see is people in the region taking part in these events. And so this opening night event and then, of course, the experience, us showing up in big numbers just demonstrates the commitment from our community to be a part of this. And I think it's important. So I hope people kind of, do the patriotic thing, step up and come on down, and it's going to be well worth their time.
Your dad and I have been around for all of the 11 Super Bowls that New Orleans has hosted. You haven't, I don't think. But I'm just looking at the banners that you guys hung up here, the from the artwork of the program covers, I guess it is, the different Super Bowls that the city has hosted before. We tie the record, right, with this one?
This is the 11th one. It ties the record with Miami, and the Superdome itself as a venue will break the record for the venue with the most.
So looking ahead, I presume we're already pitching for another Super Bowl, or it never ends? How's that work?
We are absolutely pitching for the next one, and we're going to do a press conference in a little while, and some of my comments are going to be about getting ready for the next one. So I don't think you can ever stop asking and working and looking for that next one. I'm guessing that between 8 and 10 or 12 years from now, we'll be in the right position to be able to have it again. There's just so much competition out there, but if we keep doing the things that we're supposed to do, if we take care of this convention center and the Superdome and continue to invest and preserve it, there's no reason we can't have another one soon. And Superdome's been just an incredible building. When you think about it being 50 years old this year, it's really remarkable.
And for people that have not been, they really tonight be a good night to see it with opening night about the renovations. It looks like a new facility. It really does on the inside.
In many ways, it does. It's definitely exciting to think that you can stay competitive for as long as they have. And in a city that does want to preserve and protect its history, I think it's particularly important to look at a building like that, which is 50 years old. Other cities have knocked down and built multiple stadiums in that time.
So what is a realistic expectation? 10 years, 12 years for another one?
I think so. That seems like, that seems about the norm now. You've got new stadiums coming online that get in line. You've got some other cities that do an okay job. Right. I don't think anybody does it like we do.
It's hard not to reward just the business part of it, to reward an NFL owner for building a new stadium. It's hard not to do that.
Yeah, and I think you can expect that you'll be, with Las Vegas and, of course, Nashville coming along and others, they'll be very competitive as well, and I'm sure they'll get their opportunity. But, if we keep – it's one of those things where you feel like if you focus on executing on what you need to do, then everything will take care
of
itself.
That's all you can do in life.
We take care of our business, then we'll get another
one. That's all you can do. The best that you can do in your life.
Work hard.
Don't worry about the competition.
Right? Don't worry about that.
Well, I mean, you got to worry in a little bit. But, understand what I'm saying in terms of if you want to beat your competition, but all you can do is the best you can do at the end of it. I hope people come down and take advantage of this. Because 10, 11 years is a long time. Who knows when this show is going to come back? So along those lines, for people that don't get why it is such a big deal, this is the biggest event in the world going on this weekend, and we have it here, and why so many cities spend so much money to try to get a Super Bowl, just explain how important that is, Walt.
We're sitting right now, 6,000 credential media will be operating out of this media center. You can't pay for that. You just can't. You can't get 6,000 credentialed media from around the planet to come in and write stories about your city for a week because of one event. And that's what's drawn them here. That pays dividends for us for years to come. It's really, think about this event. It's a football game, right? Mm-hmm. But it's also probably 2,000 corporate events that are happening throughout our community, impacting businesses in every corner of the city and really across the region. And what our team's going to do is we're going to leverage this exposure to try to attract conventions, conferences, meetings, leisure travelers, and it'll generate billions and billions of dollars of business for our the people who live and work in this industry and the businesses that make up the industry over the next decade or so. And so we've seen it in the past. When you have an event like this, you get a bump in visitorship, and we expect the same thing to happen again. It's about demonstrating that you are a great place to do business and to visit. And we get a chance to do that on the biggest stage. And generally, we've delivered, and I think we'll deliver again.
Somebody said January was so long, they should shorten February to 23 days, which I think is a good idea because it has been a long month.
Brutal.
But real quick, before we let you go, we paid for it with the snow a couple of weeks ago, right? The weather this week is supposed to be just fantastic.
It's gorgeous out there, and I think people are going to have a great time. You're right. The snow was a nice break, but it's good to get back to a little bit more traditional New Orleans
world. I know you got a press conference to prepare for. I've coached Walt up as much as I possibly could.
Always
as much
appreciate
as I possibly
that.
Could. Yeah, I know. Walt Leger, President and CEO of New Orleans and Company, thank you for the beautiful surroundings. Man, y'all have done a great
thank
job.
Thank you, my
Let's
friend.
Hope it's going to be a great week.
It's going to be a great week.
Tell
take
Pops
care.
Hello.
I will.
All right, man.
Take care.
All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We're talking to Michael Hecht, who is the President and CEO of GNO Inc. Noel Norman's in the building. Maybe he'll join us as well. So a lot coming up. We're live on Radio Row, New Orleans Super Bowl Host Committee Media Center. And next, it'll be Michael Hecht in the virtual Treasure Chest Casino Power Seat. That was Walt Leger in the actual Treasure Chest Power Seat. Tommy Tucker back in a flash, WWL. And Newell Norman, who showed up a little bit early and joins us, and we're thankful for that as always. Newell, and we're going to welcome in Michael Hecht in a second. Michael, President and CEO of GNO Inc. Thank you for your patience, Michael. But Newell, you've been here for all 11 Super Bowls just like I have, and you see the banners with the different program covers and everything. Man, it really does make you realize this is a big deal. This is a big old giant event.
It is huge, and I was just telling you about the process of getting our press credentials that came down yesterday, in and out in 3 minutes. Mm-hmm. You put your face up to a screen.
Yeah.
They record, hey, Newell Norman, how
right.
you doing? You're
yeah,
in line
exactly,
4A.
Yeah. Isn't that something?
By the time I got to the counter, they had all the credentials done.
Everything
amazing.
That I've seen so far has been just first class, top notch, as it has to be for a Super Bowl. And with that, we welcome in our friend Michael Hecht, President and CEO of GNO Inc. How you doing, Michael?
Man, I'm doing great. And when you say first class and top notch, I think Tommy Tucker and Newell Norman, or Newell Norman and Tommy Tucker. I just don't know which one is. I guess it depends on the day. Who's
I just think Newell Norman is all I think. I just think Newell Norman.
Yeah.
Let's talk about this Super Bowl and GNO Inc. And Newell, I want you to get involved here because I know you talk to Michael Hecht all the time. Just, you know, I was talking about, it astounds me because you've not been here for all 11, Michael, because you're not that old. But for those of us that have, it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger every year. And the magnitude of the Super Bowl itself gets bigger. And you realize how privileged we are as a city to have this. Thoughts?
Yeah, there's no question. I mean, if you listen to Roger Goodell when he was talking about this up in D.C., New Orleans is just kind of purpose built for an event like this. It's the density, it's the weather, it's the culture, and frankly, it's just one of our superpowers is hosting big events. We're really good at this. And I was actually just talking this morning to a friend, and I said, you know, the thing is that when you have the Super Bowl in a big city like an LA or a Phoenix or even a Vegas, you know, it's a big event that's going on, but the city continues. When you have the Super Bowl in New Orleans, it is the city for the week of the event. I mean, the best way I can describe my feeling right now is that I've got kind of that Mardi Gras inside the box excitement and energy, you know, nervous energy. Where am I going to go? How am I going to get around? Really looking forward to it. It's a total takeover, and I think it works for the NFL and it works for New Orleans.
There's no doubt. I mean, the economic impact, who knows? I don't know that you can ever really truly figure it out as to all the multiples. I was talking to some folks about restaurants that have been taken over for sponsors. I was trying to get someone a tee time the other day, Saturday. Almost every golf course has been bought out. So when you start thinking about the reach of what's going on here with and this is not by the NFL, this is by all their sponsors and folks,
corporate events
that are down here. I mean, just the breadth and depth of this. I don't know that we ever really truly get our hands around it. Your thoughts, Michael?
No, we don't. I mean, it kind of frustrates me when people talk about the economic impact and they say $500 million. I mean, that is the ticket sales and the beers and the hot dogs, and that's fine. But then beyond that, like you said, you've got all of the ancillary events that are going on where, if I heard Walt correctly on the last interview, he said 2,000, which is just kind of extraordinary. And then the part about it that is much harder to value but is really the true value is, you know, we're going to have probably around 150 million people worldwide watching this event. And there is a brand value and a goodwill value having people see New Orleans despite our challenges, despite Katrina, despite January 1st, despite a record snowstorm, looking and feeling and shining at its best. That is, I don't want to say invaluable because there is some value to it, but I don't know how you calculate it. I just know that we couldn't buy it.
But, you know, Michael, you're talking about having that Mardi Gras feeling, and I kind of felt the same way yesterday. And, look, they got some stuff going on. I got up very early in the morning, but, like, opening night tonight, I'm going to go to that. They got different events going on. I'm going to go to those. It's going to be a tough week, but I refuse to miss it because, like Mardi Gras, Mardi Gras happens every year. This is not going to happen here every year.
You and I might not be around for the next.
Yes, exactly. That's right. No, if you look at the actuarial tables, just saying, Noel and I are pretty.
The odds
shape,
are against this.
But the odds are against us. They're right. Because if you're 35, you're going to pay a hell of a lot less for life insurance than you are at our age, right? What?
Wow, I mean, okay, guys. Look,
Noel's like I am. He's a realist. He crunches numbers, and it's like, well, the insurance companies, they're not exactly calling us, begging us to sell us life insurance for a quarter a week or anything like that, But seriously.
Then we got to pass that physical. That's another barrier.
And ironically, we're both dressed in black, but that's not, look. Let's not get funereal about this.
Big Lou. Come on.
No, but seriously, when it comes to the Mardi Gras thing, man, I would encourage people, you know what? It might be a little bit of a pain, but I was saying earlier, Newell, I never felt unsafe walking around. Get out and enjoy this, man. You got to savor it.
Did you read the article about yesterday, our own Deuce McAllister in the carriage carrying the Lombardi Trophy?
I didn't see it. No, but I heard about it.
But they interviewed some folks from Philly and from KC. And they had been to previous Super Bowls, and they said, I've never seen anything like this before. This is absolutely incredible. And that's what the city has to offer.
Super Bowls before, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
But go ahead, Michael,
but
I'm sorry.
They don't, I mean, there's no, yeah, no, I'm sorry. There's no level of joy and just density of experience. That's not a very artful way to say it. Mm-hmm. But when you are in, when you drop into New Orleans in this environment, It's immersive. I mean, I went for a run last night just to see how things were doing and check out last minute, to-do items. And already you could feel it, the fans, the bands that were playing, the music, the lights. It's got this celebratory vibe. And I think part of it, too, is that we're in such a divisive, uncertain world right now. I think that people need a little break, just some unadulterated joy over something as meaningless and meaningful as a football game.
I was talking earlier about, and they tried to correct me on this, about the Denver-San Francisco Super Bowl, saying, yes, Denver did play San Francisco in the Super Bowl in 1990. It was a blowout game. And I was down in a quarter, but I didn't buy a drink. Like, we went down there three times, didn't buy a drink the entire time because it was just this festive party atmosphere. And I think you'll find the same thing today, Michael, and it goes to what you're talking about with just, man, leave the cares of the world behind, almost like Mardi Gras, and just enjoy being together and enjoy the fun that the Super Bowl is.
Well, there are very few cities that get to host one, right? Mm-hmm. When you think about how selective they are.
Absolutely.
Michael, well, and we're by far the smallest market. I mean, if you look at the tables, we're like Liechtenstein, in Europe on this thing. But
who?
Without
who?
Well, right.
So
yeah. Who that?
Because we were talking to Walt Leger earlier about 10, 12 years.
They're interchangeable,
maybe,
by the way.
Yeah,
though.
Maybe down the line. No, but in the competition that goes on to get them, and that makes me think about the rarefied air that it is to have one, and what you guys are talking about with the different events that are going on. Business is about networking, right? And
yeah.
Which is a fancy way of who knows who.
Right.
And what better way for big businesses to get together and make connections with Michael Hecht, with Walt Leger, and with other people than an event like this? And I guess what I'm trying to get to in my own clumsy way is that this can have an exponential increase in business in New Orleans and the area, can it not?
It can, and I don't think there's any city, we've talked to people, I don't think there's any city that has leaned into the economic development aspect of this like the way that we are here, where the state has the Louisiana Now Pavilion, which is totally dedicated to economic development, to what we're doing in energy, what we're doing in trade, what we're doing in tech, to the CEOs that are being brought in. Gano Inc. is running a CEO experience. We're bringing some of our top prospects in, and we're giving them the VIP tour. There's a young president's organization on Saturday that's happening that's going to involve me. And look, this was not on my bingo card, doing a fireside chat between Governor Jeff Landry and Curtis 50 Cent Jackson. I mean, it is a It's the Cajun Davos.
Mm-hmm.
Only you.
How do you buy tickets to see that? Because that I want to be there for that. How do you get tickets for that event?
It's for YPO. It's a kind of a semi-closed thing for this group, young presidents, organizations, and people that
they're
there.
They wouldn't let you and
buddies.
I in, Tommy.
I just like
the young presidents.
I just to see Michael Heck balance all of this. Is what I want to see. That's what I want to see. Let me take a break. Quick break. We'll pick it up. We'll come back talking to Michael Heck. Newell Norman's with us, president and CEO of GNI Inc. That's Michael Heck. Y'all know who Newell Norman is. And we're going to talk more about everything that's going on to get New Orleans ready for the Super Bowl, reaping the benefits of it, and more. 504-260-1870 if y'all have any questions or comments. Let's take a look at traffic now on WWL. Here we are. Michael Hecht is in the Treasure Chest Casino Power Seat. Newell Norman's here as well. Michael Hecht, president and CEO of GNO Inc. I know, Newell, you and Michael Hecht spend some time together every week, and we're talking about everything going in that gets New Orleans, that goes into getting New Orleans ready for the Super Bowl and then properly executing it. Right, Michael?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's been about a seven-month journey, working with an amazing team from the city, from the state, Sewer and Water Board, other organizations like DDD, the private sector. We've gotten the vast majority of a 550-plus punch list done, and it's just really, it makes me proud and happy to see the city looking so good, to know that the improvements that we've made, whether it's streets or murals, are going to last for years to come. And you really begin to realize that these major events are about more than the event and more even than the brand value, but they're a chance to do things that you wouldn't be able to get done otherwise. They're a really constructive forcing function.
What about stuff that's left to be done? Somebody texted in about litter, but, you know, litter's the kind of thing. You can clean it up tonight, and then tomorrow the truck goes by, you're right back where you started.
It's interesting, Tommy, that you say that, Michael. I happened to go down the interstate right after they cleared all the debris in the interstate and everything the other day, and it looked phenomenal. When I came down to get my media credentials yesterday, there was a bumper from a car.
That's all it takes.
And a quarter panel from another vehicle.
And with the plastic bags, and it just takes one truck is all it takes. So and you're right back there.
It's like, how many accidents have we had from the time that we actually cleaned the interstate to yesterday?
I did notice with the snow and the snow plows, it seems as though it kind of like cleaned the streets a little bit. You notice that? And
yeah.
Piled everything up on the side, all the dirt and everything else. So how hard is
it,
Michael, to stay up with that?
Well, listen, DOTD is going to be doing a final sweep of the interstate and the entrance ramps this week because, yeah, you do have to stay on top of that. We did a cleanup called NOLA Beautiful this weekend around the clean zone looking for litter. And I have to say, I can't believe I'm saying this, but Canal Street was so clean, it became kind of like an Easter egg hunt. Because, you know, we got competitive because we're competitive about everything.
Wait, to pick up trash?
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Like, if you're going to, like, so we started, like, picking up cigarette butts because, like, we were just, like, Canal Street was clean. So it's never going to be Singapore, but the city is looking good. Some of the final things that we need to do, the Hard Rock sites is done on South Rampart and Canal, but Iberville is still being worked on, but nobody goes back there. It's kind of a back service street. We did want to get new signs up in the French Quarter before the game, but now, so because they're done, there was a problem with the contract, so the signs that are going to be like, you know, actual street signs, those are going to go up after the game, which, you know, maybe is not a bad thing in terms of them staying up. But the vast majority of what the public is going to see and experience, the lights, the streets, the murals, Plaza Tower, it's getting done. I mean, I'm pleasantly shocked at how much everybody's executed in the past few weeks.
And he's this way, Tommy, just in case you didn't know, because his personal pothole on Poydras and Claiborne has been repaired.
Oh, has it?
And has stayed in that condition throughout this event thus far.
What about
that is
you mentioned the Plaza Tower. What about that? What are they going to do with that? I don't know what kind of remediation can be done with that.
Well,
because he said, Newell, I don't know if you heard him or not, but he said that they were going to call it, a hairnet, that's the way. Because I was watching this Nissan commercial that they filmed here, and I saw the building wearing a big hairnet, and I realized it was filmed here.
They're going to wrap it in saran wrap to hold it all together.
Yeah. What are they going to do, really, Michael?
Well, we had thought of like wrapping and making it like the chef from South Park, but then we decided that was too expensive, and plus the clean zone, and you know they're not, South Park isn't a sponsor of the Super Bowl, so we can't do that.
Yeah.
What we're doing is, I'm kidding. I think what we're doing is on the Loyola side, there's a massive wrap. Kind of, sort of. There's a massive wrap going up advertising Louisa Future Energy, or all of the above energy economy. Mm-hmm. On the Howard side, there's a massive banner inviting people to come and be part of New Orleans, be in our number with a phone number they can call 1-877-NOLA-NOW. And then on that massive marble fascia facing South Rampart, we're putting up a 70-foot-high Becky Foss, a huge magenta queen pelican to beautify that. So, you know, I like to say that the vast majority of what we're doing in the city is not lipstick on a pig. It's actual real infrastructure and deferred maintenance that'll last for years. The stuff we're doing around Plaza Tower is just beautifying what you see from street level and turning it into a PSA. And they're finishing that install, or they're working on it right now. I just drove by.
Is that going to be that way after the Super Bowl? It stays up?
It'll stay up. I don't know how long it'll stay up for. I think there's a good chance it stays up for months. Mm. But it's not permanent, like, you know, like the B. Mike mural or the Terrence Osborne mural or the one on Girard, because they are, you know, vinyl banners that we're hanging up. I was just texting with the team installing them. I said, because they're installing it like a shower curtain. They're putting up these rings and then stretching it. I said, that's the world's biggest shower curtain. And they texted back, the world's most expensive shower curtain.
Michael, when it comes to... things that last after, you know, people complained about the Crescent Connection lighting when they were installing it, and there was the concern about the cost and everything. But you can't run everything bare bones, and that goes to leadership, and it goes to thinking years down the line. You know, I'm a big fan of the Crescent City Connection lights. I think they look great, especially the way they have them now, morphing from red to green with a little yellow in between. Thoughts on that, about how you gotta take care of what you have, but you still have to continue to kind of recreate and become something different, right? I mean, that's leadership thinking years down the line.
That's correct. I mean, I think the essence of leadership is that, if you use kind of like a walking metaphor, you have to make sure you're not tripping on the sidewalk. You have to deal with the problems today, but you also have to make sure you're walking in the right direction. And what's nice about this Super Bowl is that we're getting to do both. We're getting to do long-term things like the lights on the bridge, which create an instant new icon for the city, or the murals that are going to be here for years. But then we're also literally filling potholes and dealing with acute issues, getting traffic lights turned back on that have to be done today. I learned this, Tommy, you know, when I was in New York, is when Bloomberg and Doctoroff, the deputy mayor, were going for the 2012 Olympics. And New York didn't win it. London, quote, won it. But because of all that preparation, Hudson Yards was built. The subway was extended. The High Line was built. There was massive new zoning and new housing built. And so I began to see that you could use these events as a way of focusing effort, and then you can have an impact that utterly transcends the event itself. And for all the focus on Shaq's Funhouse and what's going on this week, I think that the benefit is something that we're going to, you know, it's going to inure to us for an awfully long time.
Now, you know, Michael, what's interesting, too, is a lot of folks are critical of, you know, this mural, that mural. And I just remind folks, well, it's not really about you as an individual, right?
Well,
I mean, you're trying to appeal to the masses, and, you know, so just get over it and move on. We went through this with the artwork on Veterans Highway. Mm-hmm. Some people liked it.
That's
some people
right.
did. They were complaining profusely. I'd go to these civic association meetings, and it was the topic of conversation. I said, folks, it really isn't about you.
You know, I give Cynthia Lee Sheng a hard time about reimagining Jefferson Parish playgrounds, because the easiest thing in the world for her to do would have been to leave it alone, right?
Yeah,
but she
exactly.
didn't. But she wanted to make it better, and now everybody loves it. So it's like sometimes you got to get a little bit out of your comfort zone. You got to be willing to accept something new. And I'm convinced, and look, I'm probably as bad as anybody else. I could stand on a street corner, hand out $100 bills. Half the people are going to say it's not enough. The other half are going to say you're killing the economy. You're causing inflation.
Right.
You're discouraging people from working. And I'm probably as bad when it comes to my own different thing. But people just need, I guess, maybe open themselves up a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's also like that's what, look, good leadership is able to take feedback and include people in the process. That's very important because there absolutely is a wisdom, and we do live in a democracy. But on the other hand, you also have to have the vision and courage and self-confidence to know when there's something that's going to make people a little bit uncomfortable because it's new or changed, but actually it's the right thing to do. I mean, I kind of think about, like, you know, Steve Jobs and the iPad. That was something that nobody knew that they needed, but he had that vision, and it's become indispensable. And so, yeah, I think the best leaders are able to balance today versus tomorrow and are also able to take feedback, but have the confidence to know when the right thing to do is what they're going to take the risk on and do.
Michael, I had Kevin Dolio the other day, the director of Louis Armstrong International Airport, on the show. I loved his confidence. They were talking about how many private charters were coming in, how many this, how many that. And in some categories, like 10x of what we would normally have to deal with on any particular day. Any latest information on the airport?
Well, so MSY Airport looks great. They're going to take as many private as they can until they run out of parking space. Lakefront has the same thing. They're expecting hundreds of private jets. There's so much demand that you have to fly a G5 or bigger in order to even be allowed to land. So that's fine for you guys because you've got that fractional management in your G6. Mm-hmm. But for me, I'm just pushing a Cessna. So I have to go out to Slidell in order to land, and that's fine. I get it. There's a pecking order, but you know, it's just the hierarchy of the jet setting lifestyle.
Yeah, Tommy and I won't land where they accept a G5.
No, it's did you ever think about driving, Michael? You live here. It'd be silly to fly to Slidell, but you know, I'm not one to tell you your business. I'm just thinking maybe that'd be. Hey, look, when
he's got that Swifty dilemma. Yeah.
When do things really pick? When is the peak of arrivals and things really? If you had to pick a tipping point, where all right, here we go, things really are going to get going now. Wednesday.
Yeah, the slope really tips Thursday. You know, when Wednesday, if you look at when people are arriving, you're going to see, you know, Thursday is going to be like, I think, the peak arrival day. Thursday, Friday, Wednesday is when a lot of the events really start picking up. But by Thursday is when you know, you're in the chute and there's no escaping it. Yeah, that's right.
Well, this could be fun, man. I'm going to tell you what. Any final questions, Noel?
No. I think city looks great. I think things are moving in the right direction. I mean, this place, the convention center is unbelievable.
It is.
I mean, what they have set up here is just crazy.
And I would suggest, again, like I said, you know, get out to Burbs, walk around in the city.
Come down for the NFL experience.
Exactly. I mean, it starts Wednesday.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be, you know, a phenomenal venue.
Because, again,
can I make one mention, gentlemen?
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I apologize, Tommy. You know, it is going to be a mess to drive into the CBD. So we have set up with the Sports Foundation a park-and-ride system. If you go to nolastreets.info, you can find out where you can get picked up. For example, New Orleans East. There are a couple of stops in Jefferson and Delgado. And then you can get a $10 round trip below kids under 12 are free. It'll drop you off right at the convention center on Friday and Saturday. So I would definitely consider that easier and cheaper than Uber.
Is there one catch-all website where people can go to find out about the Super Bowl experience, about what you're talking about with the NOLA Streets info, one catch-all that from there they can see different links to take them to different places?
Yeah, I would give them two. So definitely the Sports Foundation, I would go to that. That's New Orleans Super Bowl. Or just Google New Orleans Sports Foundation, Greater New Orleans Sports Foundation. That's going to have all the events. And then if you go to the nolastreets.info, that's going to have all the street closures and information about the park and ride.
Hi, Michael Heck. Be safe. I'm sure we'll talk to you again.
Have a great week, Michael. Thank you so much.
Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate all your support over these weeks and months. Thank you.
All right. You bet. It's...